I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Dan Novak, and Katie Weaver. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
If you think you know who the best athlete in the world is, you may want to think again. It could be basketball's LeBron James, soccer's Cristiano Ronaldo, or Olympic swimmer Katie Ledecky. But the days surrounding Major League Baseball's All-Star Game in Denver, Colorado, played Tuesday night, demonstrated the abilities of Japan's Shohei Ohtani. A member of the Los Angeles Angels, Ohtani is in his fourth baseball season in the U.S. after starting his career in Japan. At the age of 27, Ohtani is the first ever player selected to pitch and hit in an All-Star game. The game celebrates the best hitters and the best pitchers of the season. A pitcher starts the action in baseball by trying to throw the ball past a hitter. On Tuesday night, Ohtani opened the game as the first hitter for the American League team. At the bottom of the inning, he pitched against hitters from the National League team. The 2021 season is a little more than halfway done. So far, Ohtani has 33 home runs, the most in all of baseball. A home run is a long hit that counts for at least one run in baseball. Ohtani has also pitched 13 times for the Angels this year. He is good at preventing the other team's hitters from hitting the ball. Last April, in a game against the Chicago White Sox, Ohtani threw a baseball at the speed of 162 kilometers per hour. He then hit a baseball that traveled 185 kilometers per hour. Baseball experts compare Ohtani to the famous New York Yankee, Babe Ruth. Ruth pitched and hit early in his career, but he is better known for his long home runs in the 1920s and 1930s. Ruth probably could have been the first chosen to both hit and pitch in the baseball All-Star game. But the event started in 1933, after Ruth had stopped pitching. Baseball's best players are impressed with Ohtani's ability to both pitch and hit. Most think doing just one thing is hard enough. Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves is one of baseball's best hitters. He said, "He used to pitch when he was young, but not anymore. Anytime he's on the field, you're just amazed that he has the energy, the mental energy, to handle all that," Freeman said of Ohtani. Pete Alonso of the New York Mets won the home run competition on Monday night. He said, "Most people look at Ohtani and think, oh, no, he can't do that." And then he goes out and does it. The starting pitcher for the National League is Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals. Scherzer will pitch to Ohtani at the beginning of the game. he said, "It would be awesome if I can hit." Scherzer has not gotten a hit in 30 tries this year. Ohtani said he did not think he would be chosen to pitch in the All-Star game, but Major League Baseball players selected him to pitch in the game. "It's a huge honor," he said, "and I'm going to try my best." Baseball made a small rule change to permit Ohtani to stay in the game and hit one or two times after he is done pitching. The American League team leader, known as the manager, is Kevin Cash. He is happy about the change. "This is what the fans want to see," he said. I'm Dan Friedel.
Ashley Pierce's child was ready to start kindergarten last year in Maryland's Montgomery County public school system. But when she learned the year would begin online, Pierce sent her daughter to a private Catholic school nearby. It was offering in-person classes. Now Pierce is debating whether her daughter should return to the local public school. She is unsure of moving after her daughter made friends at the Catholic school. She is also worried the school would go back online if coronavirus cases increase again. Pierce told the Associated Press, "It's going to be fine if we stay where we are, and that stability for my family is probably the way we're going to go." Many school systems across the country lost students during the pandemic, and they hope when school starts again this fall, families will choose public schools. Some schools have made efforts to connect with families of young children. Some are placing signs all over communities. Others are reaching out to families with direct phone calls. There are early signs that enrollment may not recover, says a study by Chalkbeat and the Associated Press. With fewer students, public schools could receive less money to operate. But for now, money from pandemic support is keeping school budgets strong. Chris Cram is the director of communications for the Montgomery County Public School System, where Pierce lives. He said the county has lost between 3,000 and 5,000 students since last year.
Drops in enrollment could also change the racial makeup of the country's public schools. The AP Chalkbeat study found that enrollment declines vary based on race. Enrollment in preschool to 12th grade dropped by 2.6%. among 41 states last fall. But the decline was highest among white students, whose enrollment fell more than 4%. White families' decisions seemed based mostly on whether their child's public school offered in-person learning. States where more students had online classes saw larger declines among white students. The country's Hispanic student population saw the biggest change in enrollment from before the pandemic. Enrollment dropped 1.5% among Hispanic students, a population that had been America's fastest-growing student group. That could be because of the problems Hispanics faced during the pandemic. The group saw high rates of job losses and high rates of death and hospitalization from the pandemic. As you can imagine, families and their children made a wide variety of decisions that were pandemic-related, Cram said in an email to VOA. Cram said some students left Montgomery County to attend private school or homeschool. He said other families left for economic reasons, moving to less costly areas. In the coming weeks, we will be calling, mailing, and door knocking to engage and encourage these families to return, Cram said. Richard Welsh is a professor at New York University who studies student enrollment. He said it could be difficult for schools to reconnect with families who left public schools for many reasons. Welsh said schools will have to find different ways to bring back students. "We're open for business and we're committed to in-person learning," could be targeted to white families. But for Black and Hispanic families, Welsh said, schools are talking about safety measures. One such effort is going on in San Antonio, Texas. There, the mostly Hispanic school district saw enrollment drop just over 5%. Officials there expect enrollment will rise this fall, but not to pre-pandemic levels. To build trust with families worried about in-person learning, school officials have held town meetings with families. There, families can ask experts questions about the virus and COVID-19 vaccines. The school will also continue to offer fully online classes.
San Antonio school officials are working to connect with every family who left or did not enroll their child in preschool or kindergarten. And Pedro Martinez, head of the school system, said they are contacting families by phone or with a home visit. Martinez said he is centered on classes for younger students, where enrollment dropped the most. But he is also concerned about older students from poor families. Many got jobs to help their families during the pandemic, and they continued to attend online classes this spring so they could work, Martinez said. It's so easy for a 16 or 17-year-old to prioritize work over school, he said. Cram said Montgomery County will also offer fully online school, in part to help working students. It is unclear exactly how many families left for private schools, like Pierce. Private school enrollment grew 5% or more this year in states like Delaware and New Hampshire. But in other states, including New York, Louisiana, Indiana, and Colorado, private school enrollment fell by 3% or more. It was not just wealthy families that left public schools. There were large enrollment declines among students from both poor and rich families in the 35 states that provided data. Cram said, some students will be coming back, but not all. I'm Dan Novak.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Gerald Ford. Ford was the 38th president, but he was never elected to the position. Instead, an unusual series of events brought him there. Many historians have described Ford as a good man facing a difficult situation. He tried to fix a troubled economy, end United States involvement in Vietnam, and show people that the U.S. government could continue to operate after a crisis. Critics from the two main political parties had problems with Ford's efforts, and voters did not elect him president when they had the chance in 1976. But he is remembered in American history for making many voters feel better about their elected officials. When he was born, the future president was given his father's name, Leslie Lynch King. But the boy's father was abusive. His mother separated from him a short time after their son was born. She asked a court for permission to cancel their marriage. Her request was quickly approved. She and the boy moved from the Midwestern state of Nebraska to Michigan. In a few years, the mother married a man named Gerald Ford. The couple had three sons together. The new family was warm and loving. In time, the oldest boy officially took his stepfather's name and became Gerald Rudolph Ford, Jr. He was called Jerry for short. Growing up, Jerry Ford was a well-liked person and a good student. He was also a top football player. He was named the most valuable player on his team at the University of Michigan. After finishing college, he was offered work with professional football teams. But Ford wanted to continue his education instead. He accepted coaching positions for the football and boxing teams at Yale University in Connecticut. In time, he attended the law school there. Ford's path to politics was similar to that of other presidents during that period. He worked at a law office in his home state. He fought in World War II. He married. Ford's wife was Elizabeth Bloomer. Her friends called her Betty. She had been a dancer and worked as a fashion model. The Fords went on to have four children. When Gerald Ford was 35 years old, he launched his political career. The Republican Party chose him as its candidate for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. Ford was elected to represent his home area of Grand Rapids, Michigan. But unlike many other politicians, he did not move on to the Senate or become governor of a state. Instead, he stayed in the House of Representatives for 25 years. The job of congressman was, in many ways, a good choice for Ford. He was well-liked by many voters and other lawmakers. He could help different groups come to agreement. He took increasingly important positions on political issues, and in time became the top person in his party in the House. Ford was a strong supporter of Republican presidents. In the 1968 election, Ford advocated for Richard Nixon. Ford liked Nixon's plans for the United States, as well as his efforts to improve relations with China and the Soviet Union. Both Ford and Nixon were reelected to their positions in 1972. But by then, major problems had come to light in Nixon's administration. One problem in the early 1970s related to Nixon's vice president, Spiro Agnew. Agnew had been vice president since 1969. 5 years later, officials found evidence that he had accepted money from contractors, both while Maryland's governor and as vice president. In answer, Agnew resigned from the presidency. Normally, voters elect a vice president, along with a president, every 4 years. But by coincidence, the U.S. Constitution had recently been updated to say what happens if the country needs a vice president unexpectedly. It states that the president has to nominate someone for the position. Then, a majority of lawmakers in Congress must agree. So, in 1973, Nixon nominated Gerald Ford to take Agnew's position. Nixon was not especially close to Ford, but he knew a majority of lawmakers would likely accept him as vice president. They did. However, Ford did not serve in the position long. In 8 months, another unexpected event put him in the Oval Office. In August 1974, President Richard Nixon resigned from office. He was the first president to do so. As a result, the vice president, Gerald Ford, became president. Ford was sworn in as president on August 9, 1974. Then he spoke to the nation on television. He said, "My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over." He told people, "Our Constitution works. Our great republic is a government of laws and not men." The public had, understandably, lost a good deal of faith in government officials, and especially in Richard Nixon. Ford wanted to reestablish their trust. But a few weeks after taking office, Ford used his presidential powers to pardon Nixon. The pardon meant that Nixon would never face a criminal trial, or, if found guilty, punishment for his actions. Ford said he believed pardoning Nixon would help Americans begin to recover from their painful experience with the former president. But instead, the move angered many people. They believed that Nixon should be held responsible. They also lost some of their trust in Ford. In addition to these political troubles, Ford faced other difficult issues. The American economy was struggling. His administration had to deal with unemployment, inflation, and the lasting effects of an energy crisis. The high price of oil imports came at a time when Americans were using more and more gasoline. Ford took steps aimed at improving the economy, but critics said he was not consistent. Some criticized him for increasing government spending and cutting taxes. Others criticized him for reducing government spending and raising taxes. Ford also oversaw the withdrawal of Americans from Vietnam. An earlier agreement had brought a ceasefire to groups in South Vietnam, North Vietnam, and communist forces. The U.S. officially withdrew its combat troops in 1973, but the fighting restarted. Ford asked Congress to approve military and humanitarian aid for the area, but U.S. lawmakers did not approve the full amount, and in time, they cut military aid. In 1975, communist forces began to take control of Saigon, the capital of South Vietnam. Ford ordered all remaining Americans in the country to leave, along with any South Vietnamese who were connected to the United States. He said that, as far as Americans were concerned, the Vietnam War was finished. Americans did not appear to blame Ford for the troubling end of the country's involvement in Vietnam, and some recognized that the country's economic and energy problems had started long before he became president. But in general, Ford did not have the support of Congress, and many voters did not forgive him for pardoning Nixon. In 1976, Ford officially campaigned for president for the first time. He won his party's nomination in a close race against Ronald Reagan, the former governor of California. But he lost the general election to the Democratic candidate, who said one of his best qualities was that he did not have experience in the federal government. The argument appeared persuasive to many voters, who still did not appear to be enthusiastic about the government. In the 1976 election, nearly half of all people who were legally able to vote chose not to. Ford left the presidency graciously. He said that, because he had not planned to be president, he was thankful for the unexpected opportunity. Although Ford said he was ready to retire from politics, he continued to be active in public life. He advised others on government affairs, published books, and sat on boards and committees. His wife, Betty Ford, also left a lasting effect on the public. As First Lady, she had spoken about her experience with breast cancer. After her husband left the presidency, she also spoke openly about her battle with alcohol and drug abuse. In 1982, Betty Ford co-founded the Betty Ford Center in California to help people get treatment for drug addiction. She announced her husband's death in 2006. Gerald Ford died of heart disease at the age of 93. By that time, most of the public had accepted that one of Ford's biggest achievements was to help the country recover after Nixon resigned. President Bill Clinton gave Ford a Presidential Medal of Freedom for his efforts. And even Jimmy Carter, who beat Ford in the 1976 presidential election, began his inauguration speech by thanking Ford. Carter said, "For myself and for our nation, I want to thank my predecessor for all he has done to heal our land." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.